Actually, over here, ironically, spelled T-H-A-Z-R-I-A, Thazria. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It's with that A, I guess. Yishaki Sazria. Okay. In the Goodman Chumashim, those are the Chabad Chumashim. They're fairly popular. Orange brownish cover. Yeah. They make good headrests as well. So in the Gutnik Chumashim, before every Parsha, he talks a little bit about the name of the Parsha. Just a little bit of an introduction to the Parsha. And they point out, the publisher in the name of the Rebbe, that it seems somewhat ironic that the Parsha, whose name is Tazria, right, which is of course symbolic of birth, right, that when a woman conceives and then gives birth, deals a lot with tsaras. And tsaras is generally, especially in Lashon Chazal, synonymous with death. The Gemara says that there are certain categories of people that are considered dead, and amongst the categories, there's a poor person, for example, is considered dead. A person that doesn't have any children is considered dead. One of the categories of individuals that are considered dead are people with tsaras. So it's somewhat strange that the Parsha of Tazria, which is, again, as we said, is synonymous with conception and birth, marks the tsaras, which is associated with death. So how can we reconcile those two? And here, in order to do that, we have to do a little bit of a paradigm shift. We know that tsaras is punishment. Tsaras is punishment for speaking Lashon Hara or whatever it may be. But the paradigm shift is that punishment is not and should not come out of a place of vengeance and seeking revenge. Oh, you hurt me, now I'm going to hurt you. Punishment in its purest and most real form, especially when administered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is really there in order to correct patterns of behavior that were off in order to teach us a lesson. So for example, by the Metzora who speaks Lashon Hara, we have a little bit of a help to correct that which he did. We send him Michutz L'machaneh, where there's no other people. Right? Taras is the way to get him out of the camp. But we're not interested in making him suffer. We're interested in making him learn the lesson. The lesson is, you cannot talk about, you cannot separate yourself from other people while amongst them, and we're going to send you. I'd learn how to restrain your speech, Tan the Stibor, for a little bit of it, and then come back. In essence, the punishment is a rebirth of sorts. It's a chance for you to recalibrate, to think about what you've done, to think about what you want to continue doing, and to start fresh. That is the notion of punishment. It is a rebirth, it's to cleanse. In fact, historically speaking, Derech Agav, when you went to Tzfat, you probably heard about the Mechaber's strong desire. Rav Yosef Kara had a strong desire to reinstitute the Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael. And he was about to do it. The center of Jewish learning at the time was actually split between Yerushalayim and Tzfat. And he pretty much had all the support of Tzfat, but in Yerushalayim they were not into the idea, and therefore he decided not to do it. But what was his motivation for desiring a Beis Din? His motivation that he wanted to be able to give people lashes, to give people malchus. What does that mean, he wanted to be able to give people malchus? He wanted to be able to administer punishments from the Beis Din. So this was around the time of the Inquisition. And he knew that many Jews of Gerus Sfarad, many Jews that were forced to flee out of Spain, had also been forced to do certain things that might not be congruent with their Yiddishkeit. And he wanted them to be able to be reborn, to atone for their sins. And therefore he wanted to have a Beis Din to punish them, but not to punish them out of a sense of how could you and how dare you and I'm angry at you. It was out of a sense of I love you so much and I want to help you. That's the connection between the Tazria, the birth, and the Metzora, which at first is punishment but really is ultimately a spiritual rebirth. Okay. It's a curious thing that when you watch people order things, I don't mean order in the restaurant, but put things in order, you're never quite sure if they're doing it, you know, that which comes first is the best, or you're saving the best for last. For example, if let's say somebody puts in front of you a whatever it is, steak, and you go to a wedding and they have like a steak and it comes along the side with like a piece of like a cornish hen or whatever in the chicken. So you have both on the plate. So what? Sometimes people will eat the chicken first because they want to save the steak for last because they like steak better. Sometimes people will eat the chicken first because they like the chicken best, and I just want to dig right into that chicken, you know. And maybe that will fill me up. I won't even need the steak. It's hard to know. Ordering things is a little bit complicated. The same thing happens in Briyas HaOlam when it came to the creation of the world. Man was created last. Question is, was he created last because saved the best for last? Or because, you know, it's maybe in fact there are certain things that are better than him. Maybe the fly that was created and the mice and the fish, maybe they're better than the human being. Who knows? Maybe they're more desired than the human being. How do we get? So most of us assume, and hopefully rightfully, so that of course it was a case of save the best for last. It's what we call, and we sing it every Friday night, Sof ma'aseh b'machshava tchila. Sof ma'aseh b'machshava tchila. What does that mean, Sof ma'aseh b'machshava tchila? Right? The end ma'aseh was in fact in the machshava, was in the thought first. I want a human being. But in order to have a human being, I also need to have a support system for him. I need to have a planet for him to live. I need to have vegetation and animals for him to feed off of. I need to make sure everything is set, right? It's like Rav Boaz, when he built the Beis Midrash, when he built this yeshiva, so he met with the Kablan and he built a... But all of that is so that he can finally move into Talmidim, and the Talmidim moving in was the last step. But the reason why he went through all of those steps was for to ultimately have Talmidim here. So, simple pshat is, of course, the human being is the crown of creation. Sof ma'aseh b'machshava tchila. But say the Baalei Mussar, there is a condition, there is a caveat. And that is, so long as he's doing what he's meant to be doing. The reason why I mention it now is because there's a question. Why is it that we have the repetition of Erev the mitzvah of Bris Mila? Bris Mila was already given. We know already that there's a mitzvah to be Mala was given. Why repeat it here? So Rabbeinu Bachai says that the reason why he repeats here is because you never find an instant of birth in the Torah. The mitzvah of Bris Mila. You never have the mention of a birth in the Torah without it immediately following a mitzvah. Adam and Chava were created, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells them, eat this, which is a mitzvah. Don't eat that, which is a mitzvah. Over here, we have the creation of man again, so right away we land a mitzvah. To remind us that yes, we are the choicest of creation, but only provided that, in fact, we do the mitzvahs. Right? When we do the mitzvahs, then we're upholding the world, and the world has a reason to exist. But absent the mitzvahs, then we are not the crown jewel of creation. The Baal HaTurim points out very interestingly over here. He talks about the korban that a woman brings after giving birth. And it says, "Imlos yemei tahara," after the days of her purity are completed. So she brings keves ben shnatola ula uben yona otor lechata. She brings a sheep, right, for an ola, for an ascent, and a young pigeon or a turtle dove. Ben yona otor, either a pigeon or a turtle dove for a chatas. The Baal HaTurim points out, and you have to be the Baal HaTurim to have noticed that, is that every single time in the Torah when you have a ben yona otor, it's in the opposite order. Usually it's tor or ben yona. Right? How come this time it mentions the ben yona, first the pigeon and then the turtle dove? Every other time it's turtle dove and then pigeon. How come here it is reversed order? Says the Baal HaTurim, a beautiful idea. This is the only time in the Torah where you bring just one. A single pigeon or a single turtle dove. Normally in the Torah, you bring shnei torim, or Shnei Bnei Yuna. For example, if you look even in Pasuk Ches, in Pasuk Ches it says, if you can't afford a sheep, so what do? Either two turtle doves or two pigeons. Shtei Torim or Shnei Bnei Yuna. And here it's the right order. Right? Normally, you bring two. This is the only time in the Torah where you bring just one. And says the Baal HaTorim the following. Since turtle doves, the Tor, are loyal, the Gemara says that are loyal to their mate, which means that once they have mated, they will never mate with anyone else again except for their original mate. And since that is the case, if you took just one turtle dove, you'd be condemning another turtle dove to be forever lonely. You'd be condemning another turtle dove to be forever without a mate. Therefore, when it comes to just one, as is in this case, we prefer in this case that you take a ben yuna, take a pigeon instead of a turtle dove, because a pigeon is not going to be condemned to loneliness. If you're going to take just one, we have a preference that you take the ben yuna first. When you're taking two, then it's not as relevant. There is a tor. Then you could take shnei torim. But when you're taking just one, take the pigeon first as opposed to the turtle dove. What a beautiful notion of sensitivity that we have even to animals. Sometimes people ask, where does it say in the Torah that you're supposed to be compassionate? Where does it say that? There's sometimes that it's not, things are not written explicitly, but if you read the Torah clearly, there are certain things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is alluding to time and time again that bespeak of being a mensch, that, you know, there's no explicit pasuk that says be a mensch, but the entire Torah is saturated with be a mensch, and this is one example of that. Okay. The pasuk tells us in Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Beis, Adam ki yevor besaro seyet esapachas. This is the introduction to tzaras over here. A person that should have any type of in the skin, if you should have, you know, a white spot or a shiny white leprous mark, etc., he goes to the Kohen. The Medrash brings down a, at first, somewhat enigmatic passage. The Medrash likens it to the following picture, which I'll paint for you. A king invited to his house somebody who he wanted to grant his favor to. Somebody that he wanted to wine and dine. And when this person walks into the king's palace, and he first sees in the outer courtyard all sorts of instruments of torture, you know, like the lash and the rack and all sorts. And the person's panicked. He's like, oh my gosh, what is this? And he says, don't worry. This is for the people that don't find favor in the eyes of the king, for the people that go against the king. But you are here to wine and dine. And, says the Medrash, that is the tzaras. Don't worry about it. Tzaras is only for the non-Jew, the Umus HaOlam. But the Jews, they're going to wine and dine with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the Medrash says. Now the reason why I say that this Medrash is very enigmatic and very puzzling is because there is no Tzaras for non-Jews. Tzaras for non-Jews doesn't exist. What do you mean Tzaras is for the non-Jew? There is no such thing as Tzaras for a non-Jew. Time and time the Gemara reiterates it. So what does that mean? So Shimon Schwab was puzzled by this, and he answered the following. He said that, why is Har Sinai called Sinai? One of the answers given, one of the least oft-quoted answers, but an answer given, is because at Har Sinai, Yarda Sina Le'olam, hate came down to the world. What does that mean, hate came down to the world? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to give His Torah to one particular nation, and designated one nation as being His ambassadors in this world, so that naturally caused some sort of friction, divisiveness, and derision amongst the world and the Jews. You're choosing them over us, it's not fair, I don't like it, jealousy. And there was naturally, from that time on, a separation between us and the Gentile world. Says of Simon Schwab, that when the Medrash says that Saras is reserved for the non-Jew, it doesn't literally mean a non-Jew. But a non-Jew in the sense of a person that is not kind, that hates another Jew. A person who will speak about another Jew. Again, why does Saras come? Lashon Hara. Why would you ever speak about another person? Why would you ever show expressions of hate towards another person? Right? When you do that, you are acting in a way that you are taking, I'm not interested in being part of the Jewish people. Right? I am causing a rift in the Jewish people. There is a certain amount of divisiveness that you have now brought up, just like a non-Jew is separate from the Jews. Now too you have separated yourself. That's what the Midrash meant by Tzaras is reserved for the non-Jew. When you speak badly of another Jew, you're taking yourself out of Yiddish, right? And you're putting yourself in a different place. You're saying, I'm not interested in being part of this nation. We need to get along with love. We need to forever be with each other. There's a maisa told of the Bavavar. The Bavavar, his minhag was that on Purim he had a barrel of beer next to him. And every chassid would come to him, you know, take a cup, dip it in the vat of beer, barrel, what do you call it? Tap?
Keg,
thank you. Dip it in the... You too quick to answer that one. Okay. Dip it in the keg and drink. You take one, you say l'chaim to the Rebbe, he says l'chaim back, you get your bracha and you move on. There was one chassid that came and he took one, l'chaim, took another, took a third, and the chassidim behind him were getting his own. What are you doing? Taking, you know, you gotta say some for us and it's not fair, everyone's waiting. So the Rebbe turned to him and the Rebbe said, there's other people online waiting as well. You should. So he says to the Rebbe, you know, a person's required to drink ad lo yada. Some people can do it in one. Me, it takes 3, 4, 5. That's what I mean. Rabbi smiled at him and said, it used to be that a person could attain that state by just watching other people get a drink as well. Right? By watching another Jew drink, you know, if you're all together, if everyone, what the Rebbe was trying to say, that nowadays there's separate. We don't view ourselves as one. You don't feel like you're getting, now I know that chemically speaking, it does not work. But the point is that if you have a room full of 100 people and each one takes one, then that should be the equivalent of you drinking 100 cups of beer, is what the Rebbe was telling the chassid. You should be able to get to Ad Lo Yada by just simply being one of 100 that drank. It shouldn't be that you're doing it all on your own. It can't be that. There used to be a cohesiveness to the Jewish people, which is lacking, as evident by your action. That's what we have to get back to. We have to be together, b'yachad, tizamin. Okay. Why dafka to the Kohanim? In that same pasuk it says, "V'uva la'Aron haKohen or lechad mi'banav haKohanim." He'll be brought to Aaron the priest or one of his sons. Why does the dafka Kohen? Why is it not a good Jewish doctor that tells us if we have tzaras or not? Many answers given. I saw one today, the first time in the Medrash in the Torah Shlema. It's quoted from a Medrash Tadshe, and the Medrash says the following. Medrash says it's inconceivable that a Kohen who is there for the good times, right? After all, the Kohen gets matnas kahuna. You come to the Kohen and you give him your truma and your meiser, and you give him parts of your korbanos. He's there for all the good parts. It is impossible that we'll allow a person to be there for the good and not expect him to also be there to help us in the bad times. A friend, right, is somebody that's supposed to be there in the good times, right? You double the joy, but you also have the pain. He's supposed to also be there to take the pain. It cannot be that when the going gets tough, then you run out the back door. It cannot be. And that's why it's particularly the Kohen that has to come. I was just listening this morning. I know nothing, but absolutely nothing, about Israeli soccer. Right? So that I'm getting this all wrong. But the one thing I got, right before the news, they play sports here. So they gave a sports update right before they start at 8 o'clock. And this, the one thing I got was that last night Beitar Yerushalayim lost, which I think is a pretty bad loss. I think it means that they go down now to a lower league. And they were getting fan reactions to the loss and the abysmal season that they've had, despite the fact that they've had a pretty good payroll, from what I understand. And the common denominator to all of the commentators, to all of the fans, was that they said, oh, they stink. I can't believe they did this. Horrible, horrible, horrible. How could it be? They had all the money. It was always in the they. But I am sure, and this is, psychologists talk about this all the time, that had Beitar Yerushalayim won, They would not have said, they won, they're awesome. They would have said, we won, we're awesome. A lot of times we tend to associate ourselves, as fans, for example, with winners. Oh, yeah, we were awesome last night. What do you mean we? It's the Knicks. They were the ones on the court, not you. Yeah, you know, but I'm a Knicks fan. Like, we're one and the same. We were awesome. But when they lose, they were horrible. I can't believe it. What were they thinking when they took that pass? And that's a little bit for the Kohanim as well. It's inconceivable that the Kohanim will only be there when it comes time to take the money and run. But when it's sad and difficult and trying times, that they should run away? Impossible. A real fan doesn't say, we won and they lost. A real fan should say, we won, we lost. And that's what the Kohanim are. The Kohanim are there through thick and thin. They're there for the good times and they're there for the bad times. Okay. There's different types of tzaras and then different parts of the body. The most severe tzaras of all is tzaras that affects a person's rosh. It starts in Pasuk Chavtet, the isho isha ki yevo nega berosho. Right. If he has it in his head. So it says, that's all about the Tahara. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm starting in Pesuk Mem. When it's not Tahara, Veishki Maretro Shokerechu Taharu. So starting in Pasuk Mem Gimel, it says, V'ratah Kohen, V'ineh She'et Onega Levana Adam Demet. The priest looks at him, and lo, the very white color of the mark is white intermingled with red, etc. Says the next Pasuk, Ish Tzaruahu Tamehu. Ish Tzaruah, he is a leprous man. In no other context of Tzaras does it say Ish Tzaruah. It always just says Tzarasi. It's Tzaras. But it doesn't say Ish Tzaruah. Here it seems seemingly much worse. It seems like we're condemning this guy as he is Tzaras. Right? He's not afflicted with Tzaras, but he is Tzaras. In other places it says Tzarasu, Tzarasi. And suddenly over here it's Ish Tzaruah. That's point number one to observe. And point number two is what happens to this guy. So the Torah tells us in Pasuk Mem Hei, he sits outside. His head is covered. And he sits there and it says, V'tameh, tameh ikra. He has to call out to everyone, I'm tameh, I'm tameh. Why does he call out to everyone, I'm tameh, I'm tameh? So the simple pshat is, so they don't come next to him and become tameh as well. But the maybe deeper pshat, as Chazal tell us, is so that when people hear that he is tameh, they will daven for him. Right? They will hear, oh, let's daven for him so that he gets better. Now, why is it that in no other tzaras does it say v'tameh tameh ikra? Why is it that dafka here, the Torah teaches us that you have to daven for this guy? And Rabbi Simon in the Zimri Baruch says that it's precisely for the reason that we pointed out initially, that this is the only place that it says ish tzaruah hu. This is the worst type of tzaras that there is. Tzaras arosh, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says, you only get when you're really bad. Right? It means that this guy is a sinner. It means that he's bad. He's beyond regular sins. He's beyond the pale of sins. In fact, he's so bad that he got Saras Arosh. That's why he gets the title of Ish Tzaruahu. But now comes along the Torah and it says, but just because he's bad, and just because he's sinned worse than other people, doesn't mean that you cannot daven for him or should not daven. Adarabba, you need to daven for him. Tameh tameh yikra, you must daven for him. There is no such thing as writing anyone off, as bad as he is. Nowadays, there's a famous tshuva from the Chazon Ish where he says, you know, how do you look at people that are not observant? And this is, what do you mean, how do you look at people that are not observant? You look at them with love and you shower them with absolute love. And that's the lesson of a year of Tameh Tameh Yikra. You had a question?
A little comment. Another reason I heard is because just that they use Lashon Hara with the mouth to spread lies or whatever and hurt people. So too, they have to repent and, I guess, from kids also with their mouth. And
right, but that wouldn't explain why Dafka by the guy that has the Rosh. That could be.
Not by the Rosh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, correct. Okay. It's just one interesting thing over here, an observation that Rav Asher of Stolen made. Over here we say, when you have this negat saras, possible, behuva la kohen, you come to Aaron HaKohen or Elachad Mibanav HaKohanim. Rav Asher of Stolen was frustrated. He told his chassidim, I don't understand. Nowadays people go to a Rebbe and they highlight all the good that they've done. He says, when I used to go to my Rebbe, Rav Shlomo of Karlin, it's Karlin Stolen, when I used to go to my Rebbe, Rav Shlomo of Karlin, who cares about the good? I would only point out to him all the bad that I've done in order so that he can help me recover. Right? That goes back to an answer we asked, why dafka to the Kohen? The Kohanim are the teachers of the nation. Sifsei Kohen, right? Sifsei Kohen, it's from the lips of the Kohen that we have our Torah. Kohanim, Levim, they're supposed to be the mentors for Klal Yisrael. And sometimes we come to our teachers and we only highlight all the accomplishments that we have. But what about the less good things? That's particularly, it's dafka there, that's the lesson. We should turn to those things with our teachers as well and ask them for their advice and their guidance. I have many Talmidim that always call, oh, Rebbe, it's great, I made a siyum, I did... It's very rare, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, it depends on if it happens or not, that I get a phone call of, Rebbe, I'm having a terrible yurida. Right? I haven't gone to shir in 3 days. I have, I'm sitting there in Seder with my chavrusa and I'm thinking about everything except for the Gemara that's in front of me. It could be that I'm not getting those phone calls because it's not happening, I hope. Or it could also be because sometimes we're ashamed of sharing, and it doesn't have to be a Rebbe, it could be with friends also. Sometimes that we're ashamed of sharing our hardships with other people. We don't want them to see our weak points. We feel vulnerable and afraid. And the lesson of the Torah is, Adarabba. Don't be afraid. It's vulnerability ultimately leads to the greatest joy. Expose yourself, allow yourself to be helped. Don't try to keep it all bottled up. Okay. Because it's Erev Pesach, I figure we'll maybe do one or two words in the Haggadah as well. Okay. Okay, we'll start backwards. Since yesterday we did a little bit of Haggadah, we'll actually start now with Shvi Shel Pesach, and then we'll work our way back to the Haggadah. Shvi Shel Pesach celebrates, and Shvi Shel Pesach is the day that Kriyas Yamsuf happened. What's the significance of Kriyas Yamsuf, other than the fact that it saved our lives, but what's the significance of it? So in the Menachas Asher, in his Haggadah, he has the following story, which I've subsequently seen written in a few places. He doesn't claim that it's his own story, I just don't know where it's up, but I saw it in the Menachas Asher, so we'll quote it from him, for Rosh Weiss. This is the following. There was once a great, great artist, and his specialty was making sculptures, a sculptor. And as all artists are likely to do, particularly at the beginning of their careers, he was not finding many clients to buy his work, and he was struggling financially. So his wife had a great idea for him. His wife said to him, listen, why don't you make a sculptor, put it in the middle of the town square, and then people will notice your work. Yeah, I think if you ever walk in Mamilla, right? So in Mamilla, they have like all of these sculptures like around, and you could, they were the artist's name, and people pay attention to them, and I don't know. Could very well be that that's how people make a pretty penny. I don't know. So she suggested the same thing to him. So he made a beautiful sculpture of a horse, just like the real thing. And amazingly, though, nobody came knocking at his door. He's like, I don't get it. My wife told me this would work. He goes to his wife and says, what's going on over here? She says, well, the problem is that it's too good. People think it's a horse. They don't look at it twice because you made a perfect copy for us. Here's what I recommend you do. Take that horse, cut it in half, put one on one side of the square and one on the other side of the square, and then people will take notice of it. The kachave, he took the horse, cut it in half, one on one side and one on the other, and boom. Everyone's like, whoa, what is this? Well, that's not a horse. That's... Right? It make them stand up and take notice. It's the same thing. That's Kriyas Yamsuf. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made this entire universe. But the problem is, or I shouldn't say problem, but the difficulty of recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this universe is the frequency with which we see things. Right? And events that should be supernatural to us and should be amazing and mind-blowing just become routine. What's the big deal? I see the ocean, I see the trees, I see these out of the middle of these rocks, I see these little green bushes growing all the time. There's nothing phenomenal about that. There's nothing exciting. And so what HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes has to do is he has to put something that's eye-catching. He says, whoa. And those eye-catching moments are supposed to make you, they shouldn't just be in the vacuum. Oh, that's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing else. It's supposed to bring you back to the artist. Oh, just like this artist, he's the one that's, that was the horse that was here last week also. It's always the artist that's behind the things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes has to do these things, but it would be lost upon us if we didn't take it back to help us recognize that every day when we walk through the world and we see the trees and the birds and the sky and everything else that we see, it should make us think to ourselves, wow, marabu ma'asecha Hashem. Okay. Back to the Haggadah proper. Not so much time. Okay. We have the following. All right, we'll do a quick gematria. Sometimes parents like to hear a gematria at their seder table. We know that there are makos for 10 makos, but there's also simanim. Rabbi Yehuda Ayano sent them simanim. What are the simanim? The tzach dash be'achav, which in gematria equals 501. Okay, hold on to that 501. There is a machlokas in the Gemara, how many makos Klal Yisrael got in Mitzrayim and how many on Yamsuf, right? Some people say 10 in Mitzrayim and 40 on Yamsuf, right? Right. Some people, right? The way it works is, in Mitzrayim it was Etzba, but Etzba Elokimu, and in Yamsuf it was Yad. So if you take the Etzba and then the Yad, so it's 5, so some people say it was a 200 total, right? 40 and 200, and some people say no, it was 250 total. 50 and another 200 after that. Five times. Oh. So, what's the significance? Why do we care how much Makos HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave? So the reason why we care is because there's a Pasuk in Chumash, and the Pasuk in Chumash tells us, Kol HaMachala Asher Samti B'Mitzrayim Lo Asim Alecha. All of this sickness, all of the plagues that I brought in Mitzrayim, I will not bring to you. So it's in our vested interest to always raise that number as much as we can. Right? Because the higher the number, that means the more things that will not befall us. The Pasuk Paskins for us says, the Grakola Machala Asher Samti B'Mitzrayim. Asher in Gematria is 501. I gave, right, if you take 50 and 200 and 250 equals 500. In Gematria you could be off by one. I'll explain to you why a different time. But so you have, the Pasuk tells us, Asher, you have 501. That's 501 Machala HaKadosh Baruch Hu Paskins that I will not put for you. Kol Machala, Asher, Lo Asim Alecha. That's also the Gematria of the Tzach Adash Be'achav, that same 501. All right. The spring word for the Haggadah is the words Arami Oved Avi, right? The Mishnah tells us in the 10th parak of Pesachim that you start the Haggadah Matchil V'dorash Me Arami Oved Avi. You start from Arami Oved Avi, which is, what is Arami Oved Avi? Where do we find that in the Torah? It's Mikra Bikurim. It's in Parashas Kitavo, and it is the paragraph that the farmer, when he brings his first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash, proclaims to the Kohen. Right? And in that paragraph is a repetition, albeit in a very small condensed form, of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It says, Arami Oved Avi, right, that's going back to Lavan and Yaakov, and then eventually it says, by Yaakov, Vayared Mitzrayima, Vayagar Sham B'Mitzrayimat, he went down to Mitzrayim, and he was very few there, as a stranger with a small number, and then, Vayisham L'Goy Gatol Atzum V'Rav, he became many, and then Vayiru Utano Amitzrim, and the Mitzrayites treated us badly and afflicted us, etc., etc. It seems strange that this is the springboard for the Haggadah. If I told you that I want you to tell over the story of Super Yetzias Mitzrayim, what would have been the natural choice for a pasuk, for the psukim to describe the story? I would imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, that I should go to, become denominated to both of you, that I should go to the psukim and say for Shmos, that actually tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right? But the two bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim, and Parshas Bo, Parshas Peshalach, all the way from the beginning till Az Yashir, till... why do we choose the springboard to be Kisavo? Right? The Mikra Bikurim. A friend of mine that was with me in Shir, actually a friend of my brother, but so his name is Rabbi Professor David Flato, he had the following suggestion. He said that look at the circumstance of this Kisavo. Who is saying Kisavo? It's the farmer that's living in Eretz Yisrael. And this Kisavo paragraph, this Arami Oved Avi paragraph is being said 300 years, right? Even more than that. Right? If it's in the Beis HaMikdash, right? If it's in the Beis HaMikdash, then it's closer to 500 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. And what's amazing about the story is that if you read it carefully in Kisavo, there's a change in the way the story is told. First it says, he went down to Mitzrayim, he is in reference to Yaakov, as a soldier and sojourned there as a stranger with a small number. And there he became a great nation, strong and numerous. Listen to the next pasuk. And the Mitzrites treated, what would you expect it to say? Treated badly. Treated the Jews badly, treated them badly, right? Continuing with the same theme. There he became a great nation, strong and numerous, and the Mitzrites treated the nation badly, but that's not what it says. And the Mitzrites treated us badly, and afflicted us, and imposed hard labor on us. Vayareu otanu amitzim, vaya'anunu, vaitnu aleinu avodah kasha. Vanitzakel, and we cried out to God, and God hearkened our voice. What happens as the story unfolds, as the farmer is telling the story? As he tells the story, he suddenly feels like he's inside the story. We have an obligation on the Seder night. Chayav Adam Lirut et Atzmo Kihilu Hu Yetzam Mitzrayim. We have an obligation to see ourselves as if we left from Mitzrayim. And we might think to ourselves, how can I, sitting in wherever I am in North America, or even in Eretz Yisrael in the year 2014, Tavshanayin Dalet 5774, how can I possibly see myself as if I left Mitzrayim? And the answer is that I'll prove to you that it can be done. Because the farmer that was living years after, 500, 600, 700 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim, he also, as he told the story, was able to connect and tap in. And that's why perhaps, although it is not the story in its as it unfolds, it is the story as told by the farmer which proves to us that we too can get into the story and see ourselves as if Yetzanim in Mitzrayim. Should all be matzliach. Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos. We'll see you again tomorrow and the day after, but Parsha-wise, not until Achemos, I don't think.